Welcome to another British Society for Haematology Lymphoma Special Interest Group podcast. My name is Shivir Musai and I'm a haematology registrar working in Birmingham. Today I have the pleasure of speaking with Dr. Sridhar Chaganti on the use of bispecific T-cell engagers in large B-cell lymphoma. So Dr. Chaganti is a consultant haematologist working at the Queen Elizabeth Hospital in Birmingham. He has a PhD in cancer studies from the University of Birmingham. He has a research interest in EBV and lymphomas. He has a special interest in lymphomas, stem cell transplantation, and cellular therapies. And he is also the chair of the BSH Lymphoma Special Interest Group. Welcome, Sridhar.
Thank you, Shivat, and thank you for the kind introduction.
All right. So I thought we'd just get started. We'll get straight into it. So we're seeing a lot of BiTEs being used these days. Well, not a lot, but more and more in our day-to-day practice. Can you just tell me what BiTEs are sort of coming out with respect to large B-cell lymphoma?
Yeah, definitely. These are really exciting times to be working in the field of lymphoma. If I think of maybe even just about 5 years ago, we had very few options when you talk about third line treatment of diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, right? So we are talking about patients who have not responded to two lines of therapy or have progressed after two lines of therapy. And there are very few options to really talk about. So we are in a really fortunate situation to be discussing options available in third line setting. BiTEs or bispecific antibodies are the could say the new therapeutic options recently approved by NICE, and we have a couple of them which are available on the NHS now for large B-cell lymphomas. And to put it very simply, bispecific antibodies target an antigen on the tumor surface, CD20 in the case of the BiTEs that we are talking of currently approved. So they target CD20 on the B-cell lymphoma, and they at the other end, the antibody will target CD3, thereby recruiting T cells to the tumor, and it's a T cell mediated kill of the tumor that we are talking of. And there are a number of BiTEs which are out there in the lymphoma setting. They are mainly targeting CD20 for the B cell lymphomas. The original CD19 targeting BiTE, if you think of it, was blinatumomab for ALL, which works very nicely in ALL, and it's been used for a number of years. Yeah. It is a slightly different BiTE because it's purely just the Fab fragments, so it does not have enough half-lives. It's given as a continuous intravenous infusion for the duration of the therapy. Whereas the BiTEs that we are now using in the lymphoma setting, they do persist. They do have a decent half-life that we can deliver them in an outpatient setting without having to do a conventional or a continuous infusion.
Okay. And so if we start with glofitamab then, so glofitamab is now available to use on the NHS. What is the evidence for using glofitamab in this setting?
So glofitamab received its license and subsequent NICE approval based upon the pivotal trial, which looked at patients third line and beyond for large B-cell lymphoma. A range of large B-cell lymphoma histologies were included in the trial. Predominantly, it was diffuse large B-cell lymphoma or transformed follicular lymphoma to diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. The trial had over 150 patients. It was a single-arm phase 2 study. Interestingly, there was something like around 35 to 40% of patients in the trial who were post-CAR T relapses. So these are patients who have received CAR-T therapy and have either not responded to CAR-T therapy or have responded and relapsed after CAR-T therapy. And that's an interesting subset because we want to know what therapeutic options these patients have and what their responses to bispecifics will be like. So the findings were quite interesting and exciting for a third line, large B-cell lymphoma setting. Glofitamab has produced complete response rates of overall response rates of around 50% and complete response rates of close to 40%. So that's pretty encouraging for patients receiving treatment in in that line.
Mm-hmm.
Of interest, also patients who had prior CAR T exposure also seem to have done, nearly equally well. In fact, statistically, there is hardly any difference between patients who were CAR T naive versus patients who had prior CAR T exposure. So that again is of interest that, patients who have relapsed after CAR T therapy still seem to respond to bispecific antibodies. So those are the response rates. Glofitamab is given as an intravenous infusion, as you will know. And again, with most BiTEs that we are using currently, there is a step-up dosing that is used to reach the maintenance dosing level, if you like.
And my understanding, we give obinutuzumab prior to starting glofitamab to sort of mitigate against the CRS risk. Is that right?
So that is, yeah, that is only applicable to, of all the BiTEs that we use, that's only applicable to glofitamab. There is a day one, cycle one, day one is the obinutuzumab. It's called priming. And I guess in theory, the effect of priming is meant to be to reduce the B cell component within the blood so that in theory, it might reduce the risk of CRS and ICANS. I'm not entirely sure if, it is really required. No other BiTE uses this kind of priming strategy prior to the bispecific antibody.
All right. And Sridhar, so we're talking about patients who are having third line treatment for large B-cell lymphoma. Although it's phase two data we're talking about, it is promising for this cohort of patients. What are the other options for treatment that we have? And I guess how do they compare? So I know you've touched on CAR T, but patients who've had prior CAR T therapy can have bispecific therapy. What about sort of chemotherapy-based options? How does it compare?
If you're looking at third line treatment options for patients, you of course have even epcoritamab, which is also another BiTE antibody, which we'll discuss in a little bit, I guess. So that's another option. Response rates look very similar to glofitamab. The main difference is being scheduling really between the two bispecific antibodies. So if you look at beyond bispecific antibodies in third line setting, you of course have CAR T cell therapy for patients who not had prior CAR T cells. If a patient has not had second line CAR T therapy, for example, then they will be eligible for third line CAR T cell therapy as long as they meet the eligibility criteria for CAR T cell treatment. So it might be an attractive option for patients who are otherwise fit for this treatment. If you look at response rates to third line CAR T, we have large scale data now. We have from the pivotal trials, we have data from real world studies, including from the UK. So you're roughly expecting something like what? Overall response rates, the best overall response rates we are talking of around maybe 70 to 80%, CR rates of around 50 to 60%. Again, these are best CR rates we are talking of. And maybe durable remissions, as in durable CR in probably around 30 to 40% of patients. In the long run, I guess we are curing maybe around a third of all infused patients with CAR T cell therapy. And I use the term cure quite specifically because it is a, we now have 5 year kind of data on these patients. So with large B cell lymphoma, if a patient is in a continuing durable remission for that period of time, we would assume that these patients are cured. So I think with increasing confidence, we can say that CAR T cell therapy in the third line setting does cure patients.
Yep.
Probably about a third of patients. Okay. So if you look at other treatment options patients may be eligible for in the third line setting, we have polatuzumab based therapies, which are approved again by NICE. So the polatuzumab and bendamustine-rituximab is the combination that is used in that setting. If you look at the pivotal trial data, you're looking at something like maybe 50% overall response rates and maybe up to 40% CR rate. So that looks very similar to what we just talked about, the BiTE data. Yeah. We do have large scale real world data from polatuzumab and bendamustine-rituximab. And in the real world, it seems to be performing less well than in the pivotal trial. The biggest issue with polatuzumab and bendamustine is the durability of these remissions. And typically, for a majority of patients, the remissions are not durable for beyond a few months. So the median PFS is 12 months or even less for patients with polatuzumab and bendamustine rituximab.
All right, thank you. So, and I guess because we have because we're using polatuzumab now more in the frontline setting with Pola-R-CHP, and potentially using polatuzumab BR as bridging for CAR-T, we'll see less of Pola-BR in the third line setting. Is that right?
Potentially, yeah. I think if you're using pertuzumab in the frontline setting, then maybe you don't want to be using it again in the relapsed refractory setting. Partly may also depend upon how long a patient is in remission for. You'll say if a patient is in remission for 5 years after a frontline Pola R-CHP, then I'll be less worried about reusing pertuzumab in that kind of a setting. I guess we should also mention loncastuximab tesirine, which is a CD19 targeting antibody drug conjugate, which is also NICE approved now in the third line setting and beyond. Response rates, CR rates are somewhat inferior to what has been noted with the bispecific antibodies. But again, you're comparing cross trials and it may be different patient populations. But of the data that is available, response rates seem to be inferior, and durability also seems to be inferior, but that is an option for, and it may be suitable for some patients either in the third line or beyond the third line setting.
Okay, if we move on to discuss epcoritamab now, is that all right? So what evidence there is for it, and I guess how it differs from glofitamab?
Oh yeah, so in some ways there are more similarities than differences in terms of the two trials. So epcoritamab is again got its license and NICE approval based upon the pivotal EPCORE and HL1 trial that was. And again, it's 150 plus patients in the trial. Again, a single arm phase two trial. Again, included the LBCL and a range of LBCL histologies within the trial, which is all good, which is all very nice to see when trials include follicular grade 3B, PMBL, high grade BNHL. But again, as would expect in real world, the majority of patients in that kind of setting will be DLBCL or transformation of a follicular to DLBCL. The trial design is very similar, as I said, and in fact, the response rates are very similar. Epcoritamab overall response rates were slightly better at 60%, but again, your cross comparison between trials there may be difference in patient populations. And CR rates of around 40%, which is almost very similar to what, or maybe very similar to what we saw with glofitamab, really. Interestingly, even a epcoritamab trial had, about up to something like up to 40% of patients were prior CAR-T exposed, and they seem to have similar kind of response rates to patients who were CAR-T naive. If there is a signal of maybe patients who may not respond as well, there was a signal in patients who are CAR-T refractory, as in patients who never responded to CAR-T progressing soon after CAR-T, their response rates to bispecifics may be slightly inferior than what it will be if you're a CAR-T naive. But otherwise, the data is very similar. As I was trying to say, the main difference between the two antibodies, epcoritamab and glofitamab, I would say is the scheduling, the treatment scheduling.
So glofitamab, you can give up to 12 cycles, is that right? Whereas epcoritamab is a continuous sort of subcutaneous regime until disease progression or toxicities. Is that right?
That's right. That's been the scheduling that has been, within the pivotal trials. So glofitamab is fixed duration treatment, and typically it's 12 cycles, so 9 months of treatment. It's done. It's given IV though, and it's a 4 hour infusion. So there is day unit time, there is visit to the hospital during the treatment phase. Epcoritamab that way is much simpler to administer because it's subcutaneous injection. But then, in the first few months, there are more visits because it's given weekly for the first 3 months or so, and then fortnightly, and then once every 4 weeks. So there may be, those kind of differences that may influence patient, selection, patient choice, or clinician choice of the treatment selection.
All right. And Frieder, in terms of patient selection, if you had a patient who needed third line treatment for diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, and they were a bit older, say 80 years old, and a bit more frail. If you had the option of, CAR T and bispecific therapy with either of these two bites, are these bispecific antibodies a bit gentler or less toxic than CAR T?
I think it's fair to say that, Shivira, that brings us very nicely into toxicity of the bites, isn't it? Yeah. So, in some ways, you could say the toxicity of bispecific antibodies is similar to that of CAR T therapy because they act by recruiting T cells and stimulating the T cells to do the tumor kill. Okay. So, the cytokine release also happens with bites. And in fact, if you look at the data of toxicity, it's quite comparable between epcoritamab and glofitamab. Roughly about half of patients will develop any grade CRS, so 50% risk of CRS. But the difference from CAR T to BiTEs is that CRS is very predictable when it happens. For example, typically it happens during the step-up doses of your antibody treatment, and typically it happens around the step-up doses, as in within a 24 to 48 hour period of the step-up doses. So it's very predictable kind of CRS that happens, right? The other important difference is a majority of the CRS is pretty low grade CRS, grade 1/2. So grade 3 or 4 CRS is very little with the bispecific antibodies. The other thing to remember, unlike for CAR T therapy, where we do not generally use any prophylaxis for CRS or ICANS. I know trials have been done to look at prophylaxis, but it is not within the standard treatment protocols for any of the CAR T cell therapies. Whereas for BiTEs, it is pretty much incorporated into the treatment regimen. Both glofitamab and epcoritamab will come with steroid prophylaxis during the step-up doses of the treatment. Once the patient has reached the full dose and they have not had any CRS or ICANS, then they don't need any more steroid prophylaxis. But during the stepping up doses, they all get steroid prophylaxis. And the very fact that they are getting step-up doses is also to mitigate or to reduce the risk of CRS and ICANS. I mean, epcoritamab is given subcutaneously primarily, again, because it is thought to reduce the toxicity of the treatment compared to intravenous administration. So there are CRS ICANS mitigation strategies that are built into the administration of these bispecific antibodies. But up to 50% CRS, predominantly low grade. The other, I guess, main difference is ICANS, which is very little with the bispecific antibodies. It can happen, clearly it can happen, but the risk of ICANS is very little. It's something like 5%, 6% ICANS we are talking of. And a majority of that ICANS is low grade ICANS again. So you're very unlikely to see high-grade ICANS needing ICU admission with a bispecific antibody, at least the ones that we are talking about. Yeah. So to that extent, they are a bit more manageable. So it allows you to select patients a bit more liberally, if you like. And fitness criteria may not necessarily need to be as strict as for CAR T, where we are talking of 20% risk of ICU admission with high-grade CRS or ICANS. So that's very different with the BiTE. So you may be able to select less fit patients. In fact, epcoritamab, on its NICE approval, as given in the clinical trial and as reflected in the NICE approval and NHS England commissioning, you are allowed to treat patients of performance status 2 with epcoritamab, whereas for glofitamab, it is 0 to 1 because the trial was 0 to 1. And for CAR T, we know that it has to be 0 to 1, and it has to be a good. If it's a 1, it has to be a good 1 to proceed to CAR T.
I guess the other thing, speaking about toxicities, access to CAR T cell therapy in the UK, CAR T therapy is given in very few designated centers. Do you think that bispecific therapy will be able to be delivered in any setting? So most hematologists work in DGHs, and their patients may not be able to get access to CAR T therapy as readily as they will for bispecific therapy, in terms of manufacturing time and specialist centers, ITU support, etc. Do you envisage that most patients not most, but a majority or a significant amount of patients will go down the bispecific therapy route as opposed to the CAR T route just because of, logistics?
That's certainly possible because as you very well outlined, CAR T therapy is only delivered through designated CAR T centers, which are increasing in number, but will still be far fewer than the centers which are able to deliver bispecific antibodies. NHS England has not restricted delivery of bispecific antibody to any designated center. So any center which is, feeling up to it and, is able to set up the service should be able to deliver bispecific antibodies. I think there's a bit of a ramp-up phase, and I expect over the next 6 to 12 months that more centers will feel comfortable, delivering the bispecific antibodies. And the other big benefit of a bispecific antibody is it's off the shelf, so a patient can have treatment tomorrow in their local center if they want to go down that route. Whereas for with CAR T therapy, we know that there is a process to get through. There's a panel approval that is required, which takes 2 weeks, 3 weeks, depending upon, there are biopsy requirements to get through a panel. And then there is collection and manufacturing time and, delivery at the end of it. So typically, there is something like from consideration of treatment to delivering the treatment, that process will take something like 8 weeks for patients. And we know that even from approval to infusion in the UK, it takes around 7 weeks to 8 weeks for patients. And there is time before approval. So for a majority of patients, it takes something like 8 weeks, whereas with bispecific, it can start the next day. So that will play into, I guess, into the decision-making process for some patients and clinicians. So I would think that in the third line and beyond setting, you will see that there is going to be a little bit of a shift of what's happening now. And there may be an increased uptake of the bispecifics. Important to remember, though, is the data we have at the moment in terms of durability of remissions with bispecifics. We still don't know if it transforms to cure for any patient. So the median, duration of a CR, we are talking about for on maybe up to 40% of patients achieving a CR. CR seem to be durable, but there is a continuing drift down within the survival curve still. So, CRs may be durable for 18 months, 24 months, or even beyond, but you are still looking at the data currently. I'm not entirely sure if it will cure patients. So if you're looking at a curative treatment option in a fit patient, then with CAR T, we have 5 year plus data. So I guess that has to be a consideration when you're looking at your patients.
Yes, of course. So that's very positive with these two bispecific antibodies that you've spoken about. For a proportion of patients, this will make a significant sort of change to their quality of life. Can you just tell me about any more bispecific antibodies that we have on the horizon for lymphoma, high-grade lymphoma or otherwise? Anything coming out of the,
So there are others. We have just seen the final analysis from ELM2 trial, which has looked at odronextamab, which is a Regeneron antibody, very similar bite to glofitamab and epcoritamab. Again, given IV, it's got a different treatment schedule. Response rates, again, should not really be comparing cross trial, but we have published response rates which look inferior to what has been reported to with the two approved antibodies that we're talking of. And the durability, if you achieve a CR, the CR seem to be equally durable between these antibodies. But it's just that less number of patients are achieving the CR with the odronextamab based upon their trial entry. So again, it is an option. I don't think odronextamab is licensed yet in any market. So we wait to see if it, goes through that process, and then they have to go through the NICE process if they want to be available on the NHS. Mosunetuzumab is the other antibody, and mosunetuzumab is again made by Roche. It's been primarily used in follicular lymphoma setting. In fact, it is licensed in the UK for follicular lymphoma, relapsed refractory third line and beyond, so minimum two prior lines of therapy. It's follicular lymphoma grade 1 to 3A. And it is based upon their pivotal trial, which has shown very promising response rates. You're looking at 80% response rate, 60% CR rates. So for low-grade lymphoma, bispecifics seem to be quite attractive an option. In fact, the response rates are better than what you see for high-grade lymphomas. Yeah, the CR rates are better. Overall response rates are better. The durability is also quite good. Most CRs are durable for at least 24 months or maybe longer. But again, it's not clear that it will transform into a cure. I guess in follicular lymphoma, we are not expecting cure. We are expecting more long-term disease control. Mosunetuzumab is not NICE approved currently, primarily for health economic kind of reasons in the cost of mosunetuzumab versus alternate treatments available in follicular lymphoma. Because life expectancy in follicular lymphoma, even in third line, can be fairly decent. But mosunetuzumab is an option for follicular lymphoma, but not available on the NHS. But having said all this, BiTEs are now being tried in more earlier lines of therapy, and BiTEs are being tried along with combinations with chemotherapy. And we have seen a number of these now. And there are clinical trials both in the first line and second line setting. And the combination with a BiTE seems to produce better response rates. Again, it's difficult to know, because you're comparing third line data of a single therapy with maybe more upfront data with combinations, right? But it's exciting times though. So BiTE plus chemotherapy, will it improve treatments based compared to what we have currently available, is time will tell.
Do you think we'll see a situation where patients are going to have bispecific therapy as bridging to CAR T?
That's a very interesting question, Shiva. It all depends upon what you define as bridging to CAR T therapy, okay? So currently, both the NICE approved antibodies, epcoritamab and glofitamab, NHS England has allowed us to use them as bridging for CAR T therapy. And you can use it, I think, glofitamab up to 3 cycles and epcoritamab maybe for up to similar kind of thing. So we are allowed to use it for bridging if we want to. Yeah.
Yes.
There is not currently that much appetite to do that within the CAR T community, because, the scheduling of the bispecifics makes it slightly tricky. If you think of epcoritamab, by the time you reach the first full dose, it is day 15 of epcoritamab, cycle one, day 15. So if you think of it, by 3 weeks, most CAR T manufacturing has happened, and you may be looking to admit your patient in week four after collection. So if you're going to start your bridging after collection with epcoritamab, and you're going to wait, 3 weeks even to get to the full dose, then you don't really have that much time. And also to remember, with glofitamab, the problem is even worse, in the sense there is obinutuzumab on day one, and then day 8 and day 15, and the first dose is not until day 22 of glofitamab. So by that time, your CAR T product is almost done and ready to be infused, right? The other thing to remember is we talked about maybe 40% CR rates and about 50 to 60% overall response rates. Typically, most of these are seen, or I should say, median time to response is 6 weeks with both the antibodies. Okay, so about half of patients who are going to achieve an overall response or CR would have achieved by 6 weeks. And if you're only going to give bridging therapy for 3 or 4 weeks, you have to think that, that's not enough time to achieve the 60% response rates or 40% CR rates that we are talking of. So if you're only going to give bridging for that period of time, expect to see much lower or much fewer responses in your patients. Yeah. These are the practical considerations. If I knew that I could continue bridging for 3 months, then maybe I would be tempted to use a bispecific. But how do I know that I can continue bridging for 3 months? If your patient is not responding, you have a problem, isn't it?
Well, thank you, Sridhar. I think we've spoken a lot about bispecific T cell engagers in both sort of large B cell lymphoma, and then you've touched on low grade B cell lymphoma as well. And I think what we're, this is an attractive option for these patients who do have, who have relapsed or who have progressive disease. And we have a lot of data coming out, or in the pipeline. Is there anything else you want to mention in terms of bispecific therapy for these cohorts of patients.
That's the important thing to remember is that they come with significant risk of B-cell aplasia and ongoing B-cell aplasia. So these patients will have low immunoglobulins. They have an increased susceptibility to infections. So that becomes crucial when you're looking after these patients. So remember to check immunoglobulin levels. Check for B-cell aplasia. If they develop infections, you have to think about not just treating those infections, but you may also have to think about immunoglobulin replacement for some of these patients, and that will add to the treatment burden, especially if a patient is on treatment for months with this. And lastly, I might do a little bit of advertising if I may. If you're attending BSH this year in Liverpool, then the Lymphomasig will be running the Lymphomasig educational session on the Monday morning, and we are discussing bispecifics as one of the topics on the Lymphomasig session at BSH this year, and it will be focusing primarily on delivering bispecifics in a district general hospital setting, the administration and management in that setting.
All right, perfect. Well, thank you for your time today, Dr. Chiganti. It's always a pleasure to speak with you, and we do look forward to that session later this year at the
Yeah,
ASL.
and nice talking to you, Shivir.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.